the Financial Sense Midweek Edition with Jim Poplava. Delving in-depth with authors and experts into the key economic issues.
Hi, everyone. I'm Jim Poplava, and welcome to this week's edition of Lifetime Income.
And I'm John Loeffler, and now it's official. Congress passed, in the middle of the night, albeit, and the president signed into law a budget bill, which will carry over into 2017. So many of the issues we have discussed here on Lifetime Income, such as a 52% Medicare premium increase, cuts to disability payments, and the elimination of maximizing Social Security benefits, have now been clarified, as opposed to being a fight about what might be. This is now an establishment of what will be based on the bill. There are still opportunities to use maximization strategies if you are age 65 and a half or age 66, but you have a very short window of time to do so. And this is important that you understand this. You've got about a 6-month window here in which to take action before you're going to be frozen into your course of either action or inaction. So, Jim, the spending bill is final. What is absolutely amazing, I'm calling this the beginning of the great reneging, where we're going to see changes on Social Security and Medicare and even Obamacare, because all of these programs are unsustainable the way they're currently structured. But it's amazing that the most sweeping change to Medicare in 3 decades wasn't debated. There was hardly any mention in the press at the president's bequest. It simply got passed with very few people hardly talking about it. And that's what surprised me. I've been looking in the media and I can't find much except Professor Larry Kotlikoff from Boston University. And he's going to be on the program tomorrow as our guest here on Lifetime Income. But this bill is going to have a major impact on baby boomers' Social Security benefits, and it is going to impact women the most. And what we would like to do here today is try to get into details to let you understand exactly what is happening, because it's a little complex. So here we go.
Yeah, this bill, if you boil it down to what did they just do? They effectively killed the file and suspend and the file and restrict strategies, John, that we were talking about for the last couple of months. And you'll be listening to Professor Lawrence Kotlikoff. He just came out with a brand new book this year. He's very well known and very respected. In fact, to his credit, he got part of the bill changed when he first heard about it. They were going to cut benefits to existing beneficiaries, and he wrote a big blog on it. Fortunately, it was picked up on by one or two congressmen that changed that provision in the bill, which just goes to show you a lot of times they pass bills and they don't even know what the heck they are signing. And you're right, there was absolutely no debate on this. And the problem with these getting rid of these two strategies, and you'll hear Professor Kotlikoff talk about this, is it came down from the White House, and the White House thought this was a view for just rich people. Actually, it hurts the middle class and primarily women. And Kotlikoff actually admitted he voted for the president, but this was just something that there wasn't a lot of thought behind it. And, you know, the unfortunate thing is women make up 83% of the surviving beneficiaries of Social Security. So I guess there's good news here. These benefits will still be available, as John talked about, for the next 6 months. However, there's a limitation. You have to be age 65 and a half or currently age 66. And there's going to be a 6-month window of time, but there is only that time window. It'll end April 30th. When it ends, this is going to have a major, major impact on retirement planning for tens of millions of boomers that are going to be heading into retirement over the balance of this decade and into the next decade.
And we actually know that more is coming, but it probably won't come until the 2016 elections, because when it comes to elections, there are two letters P that are involved. One is polls and the other is pain. And politicians, and probably P, politicians is the third letter P there, meaning that politicians don't like it when their voters have pain because they show it at the polls. And so the changes that are coming in the future are being withheld. But nevertheless, these are rather substantial. So I think what we need to do is refresh people on how these strategies used to work and then how they will work now. Because as we've said, this is the most sweeping change to Social Security in three decades. And the media, and especially, and I think Dr. Kotlikoff pointed this out too, AARP are silent on this matter. This is going by right underneath the board. So the best way to begin is to talk about why it used to work and how, by the way, because when you talk about file and suspend, well, what does that mean? And just what got taken away. So start with that.
Well, I mean, the original version of file and suspend allowed someone upon reaching full retirement age to file for their Social Security retirement benefits. And then what would happen? You would suspend them. And when you did, it would allow those benefits to grow at 8% per year until age 70. So another 32% greater Social Security. We'll talk about the implications for survivors in a minute. But more importantly, the minute that you filed and suspended, even though you weren't going to get yours, in most cases, the lesser earning spouse, usually women, would get 50% of the benefits of her husband's, allowing her own benefits to accumulate just like her husband's at 8% a year. And until, you know, basically what happens here, husband files for his Social Security benefits. He files, but he suspends them, which means he doesn't take the benefit. His benefit grows at 8% a year, but his wife can then apply for 50% of her husband's benefits. So you have one Social Security check going to the wife. And then what would happen is the wife would do something called file and restrict, which she'd say, okay, I'm going to take 50% of my husband's right now, but I'm going to allow my own benefit to accumulate at 8% a year, just like my husband's until age 70. And we'll see which one's better, 50% of my husband's or my own benefit that I earned growing at 8% a year. And usually the wife, it left the wife in a better financial position in a couple of ways. Number one, if both husband and wife lived, they were better off. And then obviously when her husband passed away, because he allowed his Social Security benefit to grow, it was the larger one at 8% a year. When one spouse passes away, the survivor, usually the woman, can only get one benefit. In most cases, she would then take her husband's, but she would lose her benefit. So it was a way that made it much better for a surviving spouse. And that's why, John, this is basically really going to hit women very, very hard. And this official date of this crackdown takes place April 30th of next year. So if you are 65 and a half or age 66, you have now 6 months to take advantage of these strategies, because after April, they're going away forever.
You know, what's been frustrating for me trying to follow this initially is that this is so complex, like so many government programs. How do you tell what's happening? Maybe the best way to illustrate this would be an example showing how it used to work and then the benefits of the strategy, which just got axed by Congress.
Yeah, I know. Let's take an example. Let's take a couple and just make it easy. They're both age 66 for illustration. We'll call them Jack and Kathy. Both are age 66. They've been married 40 years. They're in a household where Jack was the primary breadwinner and Kathy never worked outside the household. So Jack is eligible for retirement benefits, and let's call this $2,000 a month, at his full retirement age at age 66. Kathy, at her full retirement age, would have no retirement benefit of her own because she didn't work, so she didn't contribute to the system. But she is eligible for a spousal benefit of $1,000 a month, which is roughly half of Jack's Social Security.
Why is she eligible for that now? Because she didn't work.
That's the way the law was. It was a spousal benefit. It was recognizing the women's contribution to the family. And so a lot of women either have less benefits because maybe they stayed home during the child rearing years. You know, maybe she went to work, she had a child, took off a couple of years, went back to work. But in this case, you know, think of the World War II generation, John, where, you know, basically the women stayed at home and it was a one breadwinner. So this was a way of giving something to the wife. Now, let's go on. Jack wants to delay his benefit until age 70 because increasing his benefit by 4 years at 8% of a year, his benefit goes from $2,000 a month to $2,640. So $640 more a month, that's about $7,000, $8,000 a year. So doing so not only boosts his own benefit, but increases the size of Jack's survivor benefit that would be payable to his wife, Kathy, assuming that Jack, generally the case, because 83% of the beneficiaries of Social Security are usually women. However, waiting until Jack turns 70 means that Kathy won't receive any of her $1,000 a month spousal benefit until then either, since Kathy cannot get a spousal benefit until Jack actually files for his own. And since there are no delayed retirement credits for spousal benefits, the extra 4 years of waiting just means that Kathy permanently loses those 4 years of $1,000 a month benefits with no benefit in return. That's what's going to happen going forward. And basically, to resolve this issue, in the past, what would happen is the husband would file and suspend, which in this case, if Jack did that, Kathy would get half his pension. But going forward, after April of next year, if the husband, in this case Jack, filed and suspend and Kathy, let's say, did not pay into the system, she would absolutely get zero. And so basically what this bill did, John, effectively, the strategy of file and suspend is effectively dead, meaning the spousal benefit of 50% is just not going to be there.
Yeah, and I can see why they would originally do that, because as you said, for a long time, women were at home. This was the standard until women entered the workforce in larger amounts. And if her husband passed away, she'd have nothing, you know, even though she had raised the family and done all the things at home. So that was what the whole purpose of that was. All right. So now how does this work? Because that's all gone and we have a new budget bill that's gone through, and that's changed this whole process in Social Security, which, as you mentioned, is ironic because we've talked about this strategy quite a bit on lifetime income. But Dr. Kotlikoff is going to talk about the changes to Social Security being initiated by the White House, because at the time they thought that it was rich people who were taking advantage of that, when in fact it hurts women the most and middle class Americans. This is where it's going to strike hardest.
You know, as I mentioned, under the new rules, and here's the amazing thing on this budget bill, John, it was basically almost two or three paragraphs. It's called Section 831 of the Bipartisan Budget Act of 2015. Now, when Jack suspends his benefits, he will not only suspend his own benefits going forward, meaning he doesn't get a check, it'll just accumulate until age 70, all or any benefits payable to any other beneficiaries, whether it's disabled children or a wife, it's not going to happen. In case of his wife, Kathy, as I mentioned, her benefits previously would have been 50% of her husband's Social Security benefit at the time he files. In this case that we just discussed, it would have been Jack's benefit was $2,000, so she would at least got $1,000 a month or $12,000. Now, going forward, Jack suspends, Kathy would not be eligible for a spousal benefit. So effectively, John, what this bill does, it kills file and suspend, and it's gone. And they originally put this in to sort of equalize some of the disadvantages that women have, because, folks, when you get your Social Security, it's based on the average income over 35 years. So if you're a woman, out of 35 years, according to the Social Security Department, the average woman is out of the workforce 13 years raising children. So let's just make this easy for math. Let's say out of 35 years, you were out of the workforce for 10 years raising kids. Those 10 years that you were out of work, you get a zero that gets added in the average. So you get 10 years of zero added to your 25 years that makes up the 35 years that you get your average. So women always had less Social Security benefits on their own from what they paid in. So they did the file and suspend, file and restrict to sort of equalize it, because they did realize that, you know, 83% of the beneficiaries, surviving beneficiaries, are women. So they were doing this to sort of equalize that. This essentially killed it. So in the future, men like Jack file and suspend, they not only suspend their own benefits, but they also effectively suspend their wife's benefits as well. So if the husband suspends, his wife will have to wait on claiming her own spousal benefits as well. And especially, too, in marriages where, let's say, there's an age difference between the husband and the wife, with the husband generally being older. So it even creates a further burden in women. There was already an unequal situation. John, this just made it worse.
Yes, what Dr. Kotlikoff was saying in one of his columns that I was reading was that what this is effectively doing is forcing people to take benefits earlier, to actually take active benefits earlier, rather than waiting until age 70 in order to be able to maximize them. That's the net effect of what we're seeing, because in order to activate the wife's benefit, the husband's going to have to do it. So you can see this in that kind of a circumstance. Okay, now that's the major one that everybody's concerned about. Any other provisions that were affected under this bill?
Yeah, I mean, there was another one. It was called the individual file and suspend and the ability to get a lump sum retroactive and reinstatement. And what this essentially did is, let's say that at age 66, you file and suspend and you think your benefits are going to get bigger and grow at 8% a year for 4 years. That's 32% larger. In the case I just discussed, Jack's benefits would grow from $2,000 to $2,650 a month. Now, suppose that Jack plans to delay his benefits to age 70. However, just in case he chooses to file and suspend upon reaching his full retirement age at 66. So it would go up by 32%. However, let's put in a situation, and this happens. Jack finds out he has a terminal illness at age 69, such that delaying the benefits will no longer be beneficial. He can request a retroactive payment of his benefits going back to the age of 66. So let's say he had gone on for 3 years without receiving benefits. What would happen is he would get 3 years of benefits in a lump sum. They just got rid of that as well. And like I said, John, this just blows me away. The biggest change in three decades to Social Security going to affect 40 to 50 million boomers in this country. It wasn't even debated. The media has been dead silence on this intentionally because they don't want voters to know about this. You know, a lot of people just don't know the total benefits available to them under Medicare or Social Security. We've talked about this in the past, so they just figured, you know what? What they don't know won't hurt them. Well, they just got deeply hurt, and this was one of the things that they changed where you think you're going to live a long period of time, but all of a sudden something comes up, a terminal illness, or your wife passes away, whatever reason, you decide, you know what, I originally wanted to let this thing accumulate for 4 years, but because health reasons or a change in circumstances, I really need the income now. And you can file for a retroactive going all the way back to the day that you originally filed and suspended. John, that was taken away as well.
Okay, what other changes went into effect with this bill? Things that we need to know about. How can they realize how sweeping the bill is if no one's telling them about it? Just as they don't realize how sweeping Obamacare was at the time. And we're still learning how sweeping it is because we're finding out that most of what we were promised under Obamacare is turning out not to be true. And what's really interesting about this, because it's revelatory, is that, first of all, the administration, who was supposed to be transparent, remember, the media, who were supposed to be the watchdogs, and especially AARP, which maintains that it's watching out for senior citizens, they're all silent on this bill.
Yeah, absolutely silent. And I'm not going to take away from Professor Kotlikoff, who will be our guest on the program tomorrow. He's considered one of the nation's leading experts on Social Security. Talk about, you know, I can see why he's upset. He takes the time to educate people. He came out with a book at the beginning of the year, How to Maximize Your Social Security Benefits. He writes it, comes out in the beginning of the year, and this bill comes forward. Now, to the professor's credit, he stopped one of the real painful provisions that were in there that would have cut off existing benefits to those people. In other words, they were going to go in and say, hey, if you did the file and suspend, file and restrict in the last year or two, we were going to cut off your benefits. And, you know, congressmen didn't even know that was in there. Unfortunately, Kotlikoff got that out there and they yanked that provision out of there. But I think the one that they yanked out where you file and suspend and then all of a sudden you find out you have a terminal illness and you want to go back and collect, you can't do that again. The other thing they got rid of, which was the file and restrict, and here again, hitting women. And the way that was used is, let's take the case of Jack and Kathy. And as I mentioned, Jack's benefits when he filed and suspended were $2,000 a month. Now, in this case, originally I said Kathy didn't work. Let's say in this instance, Kathy did work and her benefits would be $1,100 a month. But what she decides to do is Jack, her husband, files and suspends. This gives Kathy a 50% spousal benefit of half of that. That's $1,000 a month. Her own benefit of $1,100 a month, she decides that she will restrict, meaning that she will suspend receiving her own benefit and take 50% of her husband's instead. The benefit is that her benefit of $1,100 a month would go up 8% a year. So at age 70, Kathy's benefit would be $1,452 a month instead of $1,000 a month. So if Kathy lives to age 70 and Jack's still living at age 70, not only would Jack get a greater income, which would be the primary income that will go to Kathy should Jack predecease her, but also if they both live, Kathy's own benefits from working in the system would grow to age 1452. So basically, they got rid of that as well. That is gone, John. So, you know, being able to go back and collect, being able to file and suspend, being able to file and restrict. Like I said, once again, I've never seen anything like this. I don't care if it's Obamacare or what just passed, where you pass this sweeping change, and it's kind of like the attitude, well, you got to pass it to find out what's in it. The trouble is, a lot of congressmen, I don't think, even know what's in this, because, once again, they were going to cut off existing benefits to people until Kotlikoff wrote in his blog and at least got it on NPR, and there was a backlash over that because a lot of the congressmen simply didn't even know this even existed. And so, anyway, folks, it is now signed into law. The bill got passed on Friday. The president signed it on Monday. It is now official. It's law. And these strategies will terminate April 30th of next year. So if you're 65 and a half and age 66, you still have these options. And please, if you are getting ready to apply for Social Security, know what these options do and do a little planning, because this can make a world of difference, literally hundreds of thousands of dollars of difference in your own retirement.
All right. Well, let's assume things have changed, which is not is more than an assumption, as a matter of fact, because it has. How is the strategy going to work now and or in the future? Is it really valid anymore, or is it just something we throw on the dust heap of history?
Well, I mean, depending on circumstances, your own need for income, there are some strategies that you might want to file and suspend, especially, you know, execs that are getting, let's say, executive deferred compensation payouts, or you don't need the income, but you just want to make sure that your wife has a better Social Security check. So there are cases where the file and suspend may still work depending on your financial circumstances. But essentially, John, what this is going to do now, in order for the wife to get a check, you know, basically husband turns age 66, he's just going to have to file and collect. So they're really forcing people to start taking their check at age 66, which means it's going to hurt. You know, we've used this strategy effectively as a future inflation hedge. And the example that I just gave between Jack and Kathy, Jack's Social Security benefit would grow from $2,000 to $2,650, and Kathy's would grow from $1,100 to $1,452 a month. So, you know, that was a nice inflation hedge. And, you know, that's equivalent to almost having another $500,000 of capital that would produce the extra benefits that would accrue till age 70, not to mention the fact the loss of the income currently as a result of losing the spousal benefit when you file and suspend. So there are still some circumstances, but I would say for the most part, John, it's going to force most husbands or the main breadwinner to, when they file for Social Security, to start collecting it immediately.
Any other rules that this law impacts?
Yes, this one is unintended consequences, and boy, are lawyers going to have a field day with this one. This applies to divorced women. If you're divorced or in the process of going to a divorce, you want to listen to this. In the past, when you had these kind of things occur, let's say a husband and wife are separating. If you were married to a man for 10 years, regardless if he remarries or what, if he filed and suspended, you could get 50% of his benefits. Well, guess what? Now, let's say you were married to a guy for 10 years, you both gone your separate ways, you're still a single woman out there in the workforce, and your former husband was the main breadwinner. At age 66, he decides to file and suspend. Guess what? If he files and suspends to age 70, you get nothing to age 70. You're going to have to rely strictly on your own benefits. So, John, this is going to wreak havoc in divorce settlements, and I don't think attorneys really understand this at this point. So it's going to affect divorce settlements, because a lot of times when there are divorces, there is calculations based on what possible Social Security benefits, giving the divorced wife the ability to have at least 50% of her husband's benefit. Well, guess what? If he files and suspends to age 70, you're going to have to wait to age 70. It's no longer. So this is also going to affect a lot of divorced spouses out there.
You know, I was watching something recently where a congressman was being interviewed, and he said, if I had to sit and read everything that we're passing, which maybe tells us they're passing far too much, that's the first thing. But all of that aside, then that would be all he was doing, is sitting there reading and reading and reading and reading. So they rely on summaries that the parties pass around or on things their staffers read. And occasionally, as happened in the case of Larry Kotlikoff, and it's not the first time that a single person writing and pointing something out has managed to reshape a bill that the people voting on it didn't know was in there. But it does show you here that, first of all, there is sort of an atmosphere of political correctness that the people who are supposed to be the watchdogs refuse to report on certain things. And you know that you realize that there's a disparity between all of the arguments about, oh, we care about the poor, we care about jobs, we care about the middle class, we care about women, we care about minorities. But when you look at the hard print of what's going on, that sometimes is betrayed. It's not really the truth. And that's certainly the case of what's happened here.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. And once again, I'm just blown away at the way major legislation is done in the last 7 years, whether it's Obamacare and now this bill. And John, you know, we often hear that, what is it? Social Security is the third rail in politics. You just don't want to talk or touch upon it in an election year. And maybe that's why they kept it quiet, because we are in a presidential election cycle with people running for Congress and obviously a new president. And maybe that's why they wanted to keep it hush-hush. It was maybe a backroom deal and say, let's see if we can fool the voters and nobody will talk about it and we can get this through, which is what they did.
Yeah, and you have to recognize we are 10 years out from President Bush's State of the Union message, where he said that Social Security was going to be in real trouble, and he was roundly booed for that. Remember that? 2005. So we're 10 years out. They've wasted 10 full years on this, even though in the 90s we knew we were in trouble. But you're right, it's a third rail. You can see that. I was reading some of the reader comments to Professor Kotlikoff's column, and sure enough, the blame of the politicians is taking place. And face it, of all the crises that you and I can see coming over the next 4 to 8 years, whoever's in office is going to be blamed. It doesn't make any difference who's responsible. The ones in office are going to be blamed, and that's why they're hesitant to tell people what's up. Well, it's time for us to go to a real-life study, which we do here on Lifetime Income. And today we have Mike, who is 66 years old, and Sandy is 65, both recently retired. Remember, this is a real-life study, but we changed the names to protect the privacy of the people involved.
Yeah, basically, in this case, Mike and Sandy, their combined annual expenses were roughly about $60,000 a year. Now, Mike received a pension of $50,000 a year with only a 50% survivor benefit. The reason they did that is people live long on Mike's side of the family. And obviously, when there's only a 50% survivor benefit with longevity running more so on his side than Sandy's side, was the reason for the 50% survivor benefit, because obviously the check is much bigger. Mike's Social Security at full retirement age at age 66 would be $28,400, and Sandy's at age 66 would be $19,000. The plan assumes Sandy files and restricts application, and then she goes for a spousal benefit until age 70, and Mike will suspend his until age 70 because they really don't need it. They had a $350,000 home, basically a townhome, no mortgages. They're looking to relocate to Arizona and Indiana, where they have children, where it's cheaper to live. And basically, there's a retirement community in Arizona on the west side called Sun City. I used to work out there in retirement planning when I first started my career, and they're looking at getting a place there where you can get a place for under $200,000, and so that would bring in some extra income, and their budget would go down even further. Their property taxes would go down, their utilities, heck, gas is a buck cheaper a gallon, and even their income taxes are cheaper. The tax in Arizona is roughly, in their bracket, would be 2.5% versus 9.3% in the state of California. So all along, so it depends on what they're looking at. The move to Arizona is one that looks more likely at this time because they have a lot of friends here, actually, because both Mike and Sandy, their working careers were spent here, and a lot of their friends are here. Other things that they had, assets, they had roughly about a couple hundred thousand dollars in cash, $300,000 in IRAs. Based on what their profile was, their primary financial problems are updating their investment allocation due to reduced returns on cash, and also they wanted to monitor living expenses. They wanted their investments to grow because, you know, once again, we never know what hand we're dealt with in life. Now, the original purpose of choosing the 50% survivor benefit is on Mike's side, my goodness, they live into their 90s. And so with the 50% survivor benefit, roughly, that was about $50,000 a year. It would have been in the $30,000 range had there been a 100% survivor benefit. So what they wanted to do is realizing, okay, what if that doesn't happen? What if Mike predeceases? So what we did is we recommended that Mike file in suspend, in which case his Social Security of $28,400 a year would grow by another 32%. So that would be a significant increase. And then Sandy's own benefit of $19,000, that would be allowed to accrue. That would grow by 30%. So Sandy will file and restrict when she reaches age 66. She's 1 year younger than Mike. She will collect the spousal benefit. That's half of roughly Mike's. So she'll get $14,200, half of Mike's Social Security. That $14,000 plus the pension of $50,000 covers really their cost of living. And their cost of living, by if they choose, and it looks more likely in recent discussions, it looks more likely they're going to move to Sun City, Arizona, where not only is the cost of living cheaper, as I just mentioned, everything is cheaper. Taxes, gasoline, cost of living, everything. And so the balance of what we did is we put a couple hundred thousand dollars in bonds because they wanted some fixed income, they wanted something predictable, and then we put about $150,000 out of the $200,000 in cash and dividend-paying stocks, because stock dividends will only be taxed at 15%, and they needed an inflation hedge because, once again, should Mike predecease Sandy, there could be an issue. So there were a couple things that we wanted to do to handle that if that would eventually happen. File and suspend, and then also some dividend-paying stocks that would grow. The dividends would grow each year so that they would have a growing income stream to take care of medical expenses, other type of expenses that grow as you get older. So, John, here was a case where file and suspend and file and restrict were taking care of a future liability, also adding an inflation hedge, and also taking care of, you know, once again, should Mike predecease Sandy. But they're fortunate. They're going to be able to do this. Basically, as long as you're 65 and a half and age 66, you can still do this. But this will end April 30th of next year. So once again, this is a reason why we love these kind of strategies, because they always provided and took care of the surviving spouse. They were an inflation hedge. There were so many things that they, unfortunately, they just got rid of.
Well, at least here in this strategy for our clients, it was a success story. Don't forget, coming up tomorrow on Lifetime Income, Dr. Larry Kotlikoff from Boston University, economist. He was the one to sound the alarm on what was going on with the changes in Social Security, and we'll have his input as to these radical changes that are underway, all at financialsense.com on Lifetime Income.
Well, that's the end of our session today, part one of Lifetime Income. You do want to hear Professor Lawrence Kotlikoff. He is going to be coming out with a blog with some updated strategies. We'll be covering more of those in the future. We'll probably do that next year, John. We'll leave this alone for a while because we've been on this subject. But I did want to get this out because the bill was signed into law on Monday. And up until this time, we've been talking about a lot of iffy things, the 52% increase in Medicare premiums, 20% cut in disability. There were a lot of things that were just juggling in the air. And, well, they've been clarified. And unfortunately, to the detriment of tens of millions of Americans. On behalf of John Loeffler and myself, we'd like to thank you for joining us here on Lifetime Income. Until you and I talk again, we hope you have a pleasant week.
You can subscribe to Financial Sense NewsHour in the iTunes and BlackBerry podcast libraries or at feeds.feedburner.com/FSN. Find more information about our guests at www.financialsense.com/newshour. Friend us at www.facebook.com/financialsenseonline. For our on-the-go listeners, you can access Financial Sense on your mobile device at m.financialsense.com. The Financial Sense NewsHour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the NewsHour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of James Poplava and do not take into account listeners' suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense NewsHour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies profiled on or advertising with Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the NewsHour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.